This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show Series 5, Episode 40, A Pile of Old Curtains. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we find out how a pile of old curtains can help you become a power hitter in cricket. We also discuss the issue of bullying, and it's in the news at the moment, so that's definitely something that we can all learn from. And we help a 15-year-old leg spinner who has trouble with batsmen who use their feet against him. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. We're back again for another week. You can finally get your half an hour of cricket coaching and cricket playing goodness. My name's David Hinchliffe. And I'm feeling a little bit tired today after flying around the world, so not a nice problem to have, but I might be sitting back on this week's show. Don't worry, we've got some excellent people to fill in the gaps that I'm going to be leaving, the first of which, he was away last week, but he's back this week. It's the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School, it's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garras.
How are we all? How's the jet lag?
Yeah, not too bad, actually. A little bit tired, bit of a headache, but you know, I'll get over it. It's very strange coming back. The flight, if you look at the time zones, the flight only takes about 3 hours, but it's a 9-hour flight. You can't quite understand. Your brain doesn't quite get used to that. So,
I've got a bit of that coming up in December. So, looking forward to that feeling, mate.
Yeah, you can't complain about it because you get to see the world and you get pretty stewardesses handing you drinks and food for hours. So it's definitely not something you can complain about. also joining me, the man who filled in excellently last week in the Garras role, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavis.
Hello, how are you?
Very good, thanks. And what have you been up to in the previous week?
We've got underway with cricket down here at the Grammar School, so that has just started with our winter programme. Almost induction style sessions just to make guys a little bit aware of what is expected of them and how things are going to work, and also teaching boys how to do basics, which isn't very fun, but things like how to operate the machine effectively and how to take ownership of that and how to be aware of what they're going to be doing. And also the guys got to hit a few balls and the guys got to do a little bit of fitness work, which was good just to get them going. But it was just a little taster before half term. They now go away for 2 weeks, and then we will be back properly full on from the start of November.
Lavers, you might be doing the nuts and bolts type of stuff at the moment, but there's been some pretty big headlines in the last few days around the autobiography of a certain Kevin Peterson. I want to take a slightly different angle on it because one of the things that KP has spoken about in his autobiography is bullying, and you know, we'll probably not know exactly what went on, although we're getting different accounts from different people, but we definitely know that bullying goes on in cricket teams at every level. We know that for sure. Whether we can talk about specific cases or not is a different matter, but we know that happens. So I wanted to get some views on bullying, what it is, how the coaches deal with it, how the players deal with it. What do you say, Garras?
Well, I think it's an interesting one because, you know, I read the stuff that's come out, and also I think we've seen it on the television. We've seen a number of the England players, and particularly the bowlers, getting really irate and shouting at people on the field. Now, whether you call that bullying or not, that's down to your own individual interpretation for me, because I think we've all done it at some point. We've all got annoyed and we've all shouted at people on cricket fields and maybe even off of them as well. And that's part of the dynamic and of the environment that you're in. I think the important thing for me is that as a coach that you stamp out on it and you have some very strong guidelines to which you apply across the team. And one of the strongest ever bits of coaching that I ever saw was from Peter Moores, where a very senior England player was doing something in a net session which effectively was stripping a teammate of confidence. And he really jumped on it very hard with a very senior player, and in that one moment he set the guidelines and the parameters of where banter stops and where you know, shouting at somebody stops, and you just don't go into those areas, because the last thing you want to do is strip any teammate of belief. You know, you can be as angry as you want, but if you start having a go at somebody and strip them belief, what is the impact of the next time when that ball goes to that person, or the next time when that person is put under pressure, which does happen a hell of a lot in international cricket because it's a pressurised environment. And in that instant, there was a big a benchmark put down on the ground that everybody would follow. And I think the disappointing thing to come out of all of this stuff with England is that there was obviously some management issues around the side and around Kevin, which needed to be cut off a lot earlier than at the time where you're writing an autobiography and somebody's been sacked and a coach has been lost. And that's a sad bit for me. But I read Kevin's stuff and I don't necessarily think it's bullying. That wouldn't be what I would call it. But equally, I don't think that it's very progressive, and I don't think it's doing anything other than stripping the belief of a teammate, which to me is the last thing that anybody really wants to do if you're like trying to win a game together.
And that's an interesting definition, because different people will have different levels of sensitivity, and some people it'll be water off a duck's back, and other people perhaps just even a passing comment can cut much deeper than you think. And it's hard to read people sometimes and know exactly what kind of level that they individually consider as bullying. So, Lavers, how would you, in your mind, how would you manage that difference in opinion of what bullying might be between two different people? Perhaps, you know, the person with the thick skin and the person who's a little bit of a sensitive soul.
I think the issue can come around where people feel they're being bullied, but then don't talk about it. And I think when people are being bullied, it's important, first of all, that it's communicated to the right person, whether that's the coach or the captain or whoever it may be. Obviously, there's a difficulty because it could be the coach or the captain that's doing the bullying. So sometimes it has to be someone who's a little bit external or a little bit away from the situation that you're in. But if you can do that, first of all, then you've actually registered it and people are aware that it's something that's going on. And from then you can bring both parties together. And it may be a misconception. It may be that the person who is delivering the bullying, as it were, didn't realise the extent of the anguish that was being caused, really. And it might be as simple as that, as a little bit of the communication, then sets the ball rolling and fixes things right away. Obviously, everything's going to be situation specific, but the first thing is telling someone.
I think Sam's made a really good point about the difference between being the recipient and the one that's putting it into play. And I know a number of the guys that have been considered, have been mentioned as people who were shouting at guys and potential bullies as such. But they're good guys. And I'm sure that they were considering it more as feedback as opposed to a bullying thing, because I can't imagine any of them being bullies in their own right. And the best feedback sessions have a caveat, don't they, that you frame a feedback session as opposed to just an off comment or somebody shouting at each other. And again, Andy Flower did a great piece of work, I remember, in Antigua in his first tour when he was interim coach, where he presented this meeting and said, right, today we are actually going to feedback to each other individually and as a team, and we're going to say some of the tough things. But because it was in the context of that meeting, it stayed as feedback as opposed to anything which could be perceived as being bullying. And that's the difference to me, is how you frame your words when you're saying stuff to somebody about their fielding or their batting or whatever the case may be. If it's in an open environment, then it could be perceived to be, I wouldn't necessarily say bullying, but it could be really tough. Whereas if you do it within a team context, or if you frame the discussion that you're going to have, then it becomes feedback that the person can take on board and then do something with.
I think it can be quite difficult as well when the person being bullied, and whoever it is, and obviously you can focus on Kevin Peterson at this time when his book's been released and there's a lot been mentioned about him, but when the person being bullied is someone who you feel can resist and can take that and has a hard exterior or gives off that impression, then the person who's delivering it can be unaware of the problems they're causing. So sometimes that strong exterior that people can create can bring more upon themselves if they're not able to make people aware of what they're doing. And that's where an environment, as Gareth suggested there, where people can be aware of, right, I'm expecting what's going to come here, I'm aware of what's coming, I'm going to use what information comes to me to my benefit, then the information's processed differently rather than being taken as a negative or a personal attack. It's something for the team.
Bullying is a very negative. It's about as negative you can get a way of communicating with someone, isn't it? I mean, but you don't get much more negative forms of communication than bullying. So perhaps even taking that word away is a start. Even if somebody feels bullied, you know, as you said, Lavers, it's worth saying, I feel bullied, because nobody can argue against how you feel. So that might be a good way to be able to bring it up by saying that I feel bullied rather than you are bullying me.
Yeah, I think terminology and the way people speak is always key to the outcome, isn't it? I actually delivered a session yesterday with the boys in our Winter Academy group, and one of the things we said is that the way we phrase things can make a massive impact on how they're received. And we were talking about, the boys were hitting some balls, and they were hitting a ball up and down the ground, and we said that, right, I'd like you to give your partner three things they're doing wrong, okay? And then I asked the boys who had given that information how they felt about it, and then we repeated it. I said, right, I'd like to give you three opportunities that they could improve on. And again, the same thing happened, but the way that the group that were getting information, things they were doing wrong, and against the group who were giving opportunities to improve, they were actually being given exactly the same information, but the way interpreted it was very, very different, because the group who were having the opportunity felt like this was something that they were excited about and something that was going to be a next step for them, whereas the other group felt like there was something they wanted to shut off and maybe something that didn't inspire them to really push themselves throughout the rest of the session. It became quite a negative thing.
Gareth, you worked at different levels. Would you say that a professional level, it becomes, because the stakes are higher, there is more incidence of this type of thing, this negative feedback, bullying, call it what you like, it happens more at the higher levels than it happens in at the lower levels? Or is it across the board? It just depends on the team and the people.
Well, I think it depends on the environment that you create. I think it depends on the way that you're going as a group. There's no doubt that the instance of negative feedback delivered in an inappropriate fashion, which I'll call it rather than bullying, happens more when you're not going well. So I think every environment, whether you're working under 11s or whether you're working with a test team, it's really important just to gauge and have some barometers within the group that tell you how you're going as a group. Okay, and I used to have at Somerset, my biggest barometer was a guy called James Hildreth, because James Hildreth would know exactly how the heartbeat of that side was operating when maybe my job being more strategic, I wouldn't pick up on it. So there's ways and means of finding out how that's going, because I can tell you, as soon as you get onto that dip, whether it be in results or just the processes that you have as a group of people together, then this is when this type of feedback and this type of issue raises its head.
Okay, I think we've got some practical stuff in there, and we've talked about a current issue, so let's move on. Let's go on to the yes-no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no to, no matter how much more that you want to say. Gareth is back, so we've got the yes or no from the team. Here we go. First question. The skill of man management is to identify where individuals get energy from.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question. Two ears, two eyes, and one mouth. Use them in that order.
No.
Yes.
Third question. Do or do not? There is no try.
No.
Yes. Yes, Yoda.
How can you argue with Yoda?
Correct.
Okay, let us delve into the mailbag again for another week. A couple of questions that we're going to pick out, and we'll answer those as best we can. And then we'll pick a winner who will win a prize of an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can send in your question to us in a variety of ways, but you can use coach@pitchvision.com if you want to email us, which is one of the most universal ways you can get hold of us. First question is from Anchor. And Anchor says, Sir, I'm a leg spinner of 15 years old. And I'm from India. My biggest problem is that when I bowl outside off stump and an over pitch ball, then the batsman comes forward and makes it a full toss. This helps the batsman to play me easily and make runs. So please give me advice in this. Now, I guess really what he's saying is he's struggling against batsmen who are confident using their feet to him. So what advice can we give a spinner who comes up against that kind of problem?
Well, it sounds firstly as if you're given the ball a chance to get up above the batsman's eye line. So I'm going to congratulate you with that. And what tends to happen as we get older and as we get more experienced as batters, we get better at judging the ball that people can use their feet to. So that's exactly what's happening. And it's now down to you to come up with a solution of how you can make the ball go up into the air, drop a bit, and then still bounce. And that's how you can deceive the batter and hopefully, as a leg spinner, particularly against right-handed batters, get those stumpings by getting the ball to go past the outside edge and getting people to run past the ball, which is great. It's exactly what we want to see. So one of the things that tends to happen about people that are generally over-pitching or bowling with a little bit too much flight is that their body weight is over their back leg as opposed to over their front leg at point of release. And Terry Jenner would be somebody that I can quote in terms of leg spin. One of the ways that we can get our body weight to go forward and therefore have a positive impact upon the trajectory of the ball, i.e. getting the ball up but also down as well, would be to push your front hand or your front arm towards the face of the batter as you come off your back leg and go into your front leg position. A lot of the times, if our front arm isn't strong and it isn't working for us, then it doesn't help us to drive over the top of the front leg. And by driving over the top of the front leg, we engage the hips, we engage the shoulder, and the ball will go up and down and have a better trajectory. So my guess is, without watching you bowl, is that there's a little bit too much weight and not enough commitment over the front leg at point of release. And that all comes from when you go from back foot contact to front foot contact. If we can really push our arm out towards the batter's face and then pull a long arm into the side of our body, that helps us get our body weight up and over. And as a consequence, the ball has a positive effect in terms of the trajectory and shape on the ball and getting it to bounce and getting it to spin. So that would be my first port of call. Look at your front arm.
Yeah, that dip is all important in deceiving the batsman, isn't it, Lavis?
Absolutely. If you can get the ball up and then down, as Gary's alluded to there, then the life of a batsman becomes pretty tough, because identifying opportunities to get down the pitch when the ball is getting up in the air but then is dropping again becomes so much more difficult. And the other thing it does is it obviously creates a little bit more bounce along the way. And that little bit of extra bounce can cause more problems as well. So if you can get that weight forward and then try and look at the direction the ball's spinning as well, if we can get a little bit of overspin on the ball, sometimes the ball comes out with big side spin on, but it doesn't necessarily have that overspin that takes it forwards as well. And as a result, you can get that big turn, but you don't necessarily get that drop that you need to get the ball dipping and then bouncing, which can cause those problems to the batsman. So simple red and white ball, something I'll be doing this afternoon, is just experimenting with the direction the ball's actually spinning as you're bowling. Is it spinning sideways and backwards? Is it spinning sideways? Is it spinning sideways and forwards? Is it spinning at all? Those kind of things. So just have a look at what the ball's doing with a half and half red and white ball, and that might give you a little bit of feedback as to how the ball is behaving in the air and maybe why it's not dropping the way you want it to. If it's not dropping, then you can go back to what Gareth has said there and try and get that body weight forward, and that might help you follow through a little bit more, which might get you over the top of the ball and get that ball spinning forwards.
And we can go back to language again, can't we? The question that Ankur asked started by saying, my biggest problem is... And actually, if you've got a batsman who's using his feet to you, that's a great challenge and a great test of your skills as a bowler, yes. But it's also an opportunity for the batsman to make a mistake. So,
Yeah, you're right, it is. And it's also an indicator that probably he's having to come forward to you because you haven't bowled any short ones for him to feed off of. So in some ways, it's a compliment because you're holding your length, you're making him drive. And then going back again to Terry Jenner, he was always encouraging bowlers to spin the ball up and make the batter drive. That's how you get your wickets. That's where your catches are placed for. They're not placed for bowling the ball flat and short into the pitch. So if the batters feel that they have to come at you, it means that you're doing something right as well. So please take that as a compliment. And going back to the original point, have a look at your weight distribution and see what that front arm can do, because often that brings everything up and over and helps to get your trajectory to be more appropriate without losing necessarily that shape on the ball, which is absolutely essential when you're deceiving batters.
Yeah, precisely. Think of it as a challenge, almost as a game to play with yourself. You know, that's why you do a crossword or play a Sudoku, isn't it? Because there's a challenge in there, and you have to try and solve it. So if you see it in that positive way and you enjoy the process of doing it, then it's going to make it less of a problem and more of a fun way to spend your time of getting more wickets.
So a little drill just to help with that whole process. Yeah. So to go back to the, if you create an intention, the body will organise itself. Stuff that I talk about is put a piece of string above the eye lines, 2/3 of a way down the net. So just a little bit of string or a little bit of rope going across. And then put a marker down, maybe a hula hoop or a cone or a stone or whatever, on a length. And the intention is to get the ball over the top of the string and to land on the target area. And if you can do that, then it's probably a pretty good chance that your body weight is in the right sort of place to make the ball go up. So you're still getting the shape on the ball, but then have the drop and then obviously the spin off of the wicket. But it was Terry Jenner's spin kit, he used to call it. We'd carry a piece of string around in a hula hoop.
Yeah, brilliant. when I was in India, I saw a drill, very similar drill like that, that used three hoops of different sizes that were raised up on stands. So the bowler had to try. The first hoop was large, and the second hoop was small, and the third hoop was smaller again, and the bowler had to try and get it through the first hoop, and once he could do that, try and get through the first and the second and then the third hoop, and also have a target area on the ground. That's quite a challenging drill, but it really focuses your mind on where you want the ball to be in the air rather than on the pitch.
Definitely, which gives you some control over it, and often you'll find with drills such as that that the body will start to organise itself to meet the challenge that's been presented by the intention.
Anchor, let us know how you get on with that. Hopefully you're going to enjoy that challenge. Our next question is from Carla, and it's short, probably quite sweet, but hopefully we can discuss around the general topic. And it's how to practice for hitting sixes without nets. Now, we might even argue that practice hitting sixes in the nets is probably one of the more difficult ways to do it.
Well, we could, and that's where pitch vision's good, isn't it? Because, you know, if we've got it set up with all of the side nets and everything, we get sensory feedback on how hard the ball's hit the net and what trajectory. Yeah. And then all of a sudden we can tell whether something that's appeared to be a good strike has reached the fence or not, or gone over the fence. So that's something that, you know, but we don't all have that in our coaching nets. So and often, as you say, David, when somebody hits a ball, they'll go, oh, I've absolutely nailed that. There'll be conjecture, won't there, around whether it's gone far enough, whether the trajectory was too high, all of that sort of thing. So really the best way to do it is to get yourself out into the middle of a cricket ground and do some range hitting, which is something that's become very popular at the top end of a game and then is now beginning to filter down into the bottom end of a game. And it's where effectively a coach or a fellow player will feed underarm balls or maybe overarm balls to you on the full toss initially. And you'll stand out in the middle of the pitch with your boundaries in place and you'll practice smacking the ball out of the park and seeing what works for you. And very much a baseball mentality, I suppose, to doing that. So that's the first way that you can have a go at that, because it gives you that, did I reach the fence, did I clear the fence or not? You know it exactly. So a really good way of doing it. Then you can start setting up bowling machines or getting people to throw on the bounce to you and progress it in that fashion. So that's something that a lot of people do, and it's something I'm sure that Sam does down at PGS, and it's something that we do ahead of our 2020 cricket in particular, which does bear some fruit. So it's worth practicing in that way. But there are also some other things that you can do away from actually hitting any balls. And on a level four presentation a couple of years ago, a former England cricketer showed me a drill which I thought was really good, and one that he'd got from golf. And he basically had a pile of old curtains in a big lump on the floor, and he would stand there with his bat, and he would stand in his stance, and then he'd simulate hitting the ball out of the ground and trying to generate the power from his stance into his movement phase and then into contact by smacking the living daylights out of the bag of curtains that was on the floor. And I thought that was a really good way of practicing hitting when you can't get outside and get the distance. So, you know, you don't even need a ball, you don't need a throw, it's just you, it's a bag of curtains, and you can smack it to death. And it's something that a number of the golf pros that operate around golf clubs around the world will use to get that commitment in the swing to be able to launch a ball big distances in their sport. And he's now taking it over and doing it within cricket. And so you can do many things like that. I just thought I'd chuck that in as a side because people might have an old bag of curtains kicking around.
That's a great one. I've seen something similar with an old boxing. What are they called? A punch bag,
like a speed ball or a punch ball. Yeah.
So no, but the big, the long bag. Yeah,
the big bag. Yeah.
So I've seen something similar to that. So that's very creative. I like that.
We actually play a similar game at school with a basketball, and this will be basically two aside. So it's almost like tennis with a basketball and a cricket bat, where you have to move your feet to get to the ball. You have to hit the ball as hard as you can do. You're looking for a full committed swing, and you've got that little element of resistance as you hit the basketball. It's really good for footwork. You can have two on two. You can have one on one if you're fit enough and you fancy charging around. You can have three on three if you want to. But it's quite a good game, and it gets them really trying to hit the ball hard, gets them looking at the ball, gets them close to the ball, and it develops the footwork as well as developing that maximal swing.
And you get that nice noise, don't you? So when you nail it, you get that audible feedback as well as being able to see the basketball, you know, going off. I think that's a fantastic one, Sam.
I'd actually turn that differently. As the coach, you get that horrible noise after about 15 minutes of a game going on and the boys belting it as hard as you can. It's, I tell you what, it echoes around the sports hall like nothing you've ever heard. But it is good fun for them. They enjoy it. And there, it's another way of working on quite a useful skill, or a couple of quite useful skills in footwork and generating power and weight transfer and range hitting, all in one thing, whilst playing a game, which is quite a good laugh with their mates.
And then when their parents ask, how was the training session today, they could say, I was seeing it like a basketball, and they can
absolutely
be telling the truth. When I was a kid, I wouldn't recommend this, by the way, but when I was a kid, the garden that we played in was facing in the opposite direction to, at a 90 degree angle, I should say, to the gardens across it. So the long part of our garden went to the short part of three other gardens. And obviously we'd play cricket on the long part, ball from one side, bat from the other side. And we would... Our version of range hitting, I suppose, was if you got it over the first wall, that was, you know, it was a good shot. If you got it over the second wall, that was a really good shot. Only once ever did anyone get it into the third garden, and it went through somebody's window. So we kind of stopped that game after that. There's a little ball-shaped hole in the window.
I do think that element of range hitting, though, and using that is a great way to get confidence and get some genuine feedback to how far you can actually hit a ball. Doesn't matter if you play in a net all day long and you hit it into the nets and you know you can whack it. Actually understanding your range and how far you can hit it is really, really key. I think sometimes you've got to be aware that because of the space it takes up, it's very disruptive if you want to do it within a session. So it's generally something you've got to get up and do off your own back. I remember this summer, three or four occasions, Glenn Maxwell would get up early and he would go down the Rose Bowl on the nursery grounds. And he was very, very good. He'd always invite one of the younger guys to go along with him. So he'd invite a 18, 19-year-old lad who might be in the academy or on the staff at Hampshire. And they'd go and do 2 hours of range hitting in the morning. There was nothing going on, no game in the morning. Get down there at 8:30, 9 o'clock and just start hitting some balls. It's a bit of a pain, obviously, going and doing the collecting. But it's something that's very valuable. And if you're really committed to trying to develop something like that, then you'll be willing to go and do it in your spare time or away from the training sessions that you're doing as well.
The other drill as well, which can be useful, is to get really back to basics, is to stick a cricket ball inside a a big long hockey sock or something and suspend that somewhere and just practice hitting that ball. It'll obviously rotate like on a rotary line or something like that, and it won't go anywhere. It will stay near you, and that's a very much a baseball type practice. So on YouTube, and most people who have access to that listen to this show, have a look at some of the baseball drills, backyard baseball drills, and you'll see some of those, and they're good for cricket as well, exactly the same.
Have you got one of Woody's machines, Gareth?
I have got one of Woody's machines, and it's good, but obviously, you know, it's expensive, and it's not going to be a, but it works off that principle, doesn't it? You know, the whole sock in the and the cricket ball thing. So, but we do use it, and in fact, Woody's going to come in and do some work with us, which would be great, because he's doing some good stuff with us on level 3 and level 4 now, the principles are very, very simple, and the practice methodology, you know, you can buy bits of kit and that's fantastic, but if you haven't got that, you can get back to basics and still get the same results.
Well, that was a fantastically comprehensive answer. Thank you, chaps. And Calla, here's to lots more sixes. It's soapbox time on the Pitch Vision Academy cricket show. And one of the problems that I always seem to have is the amount of time that the soapbox is. I seem to get it wrong every other week, and Lavers has very kindly pointed out to me as well. So it's not 30 seconds, it's 60 seconds.
There we go.
It's on the clock. It's Mark Garraway, and he's got something to say. Over to you, Gareth.
I'm going to talk about a fresh set of eyes. I'm being very lucky to work with a guy called John Troa, who's an Olympic javelin throwing coach, worked with Steve Backley and Mick Hill, who won numerous world titles and European and Commonwealth titles over the courses of their career. And he's in as a coach developer working with a number of coaches at Millfield School at the moment. He and I did a coaching session with a young off-spinner yesterday, whilst we got to the same result, his fresh pair of eyes, because he knows cricket but he's not a cricketer, gave us a different insight and a different lens to look at the same problem from, and it happened to connect with the way that that player wanted that information given, and as a result we got a great result. So all I would say to you is if you've got other coaches around you, or even if they're not coaches, get them in to look at the same problem. Get them to tell you what they see, because they might see something slightly different or word it slightly different to us that gets a result.
And we're going to wrap it up about now, or in a few moments anyway. But before we do that, we just need to decide on the winner of the prize. It's the coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had Anchor's question about batsmen using their feet to hit spin bowling. And we had Calla's question about hitting sixes without nets. Gareth, which one did you prefer this week?
Well, I say it most weeks, but these are two great questions. And I think that they inspired us as answering the questions to go into great depth, which we did. So that was good news. But this week I'm going to go for Anchor's question. I think it was a good one, and we interpreted it fairly well. And also, you can take it as a compliment that people are having to use their feet, because you're not giving them anything on the back foot. And a couple of drills there to work with to see if you can get that weight distribution right. So Anchor this week.
Well done, Anchor. Lots of detail in the question as well, so which is always good. We like a bit of detail in there if possible. Now, you can send in your question to us pretty much any time that you like, thanks to the power of the internet. Gareth, if someone wanted to do that, how would they get in touch with us?
Well, the way they can get in touch with us is to give us a call on 0203 239 7543, or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. And here comes the challenging part. I don't know whether I'm going to get through it with the jet lag, but here we go. Let's see if I can do it. There are other ways of getting in touch with us is through our Twitter page, which is at Pitch Vision Acad. And you can also find us on Facebook. If you go over to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, there's lots of stuff going on there. There's also other ways of getting in touch with us, and you can find out more about that by going to the Pitch Vision website. If you want to subscribe to this show, then you can do that as well. Just do a search for us in your favorite podcatching program, whatever that is, Dogcatcher, Overcast, Downcast, Apple Podcasts, even Windows Phone Podcasts, if you want to go that far. You can find us in all of those. And if you have any trouble finding us that way, then you can always do the old reliable RSS feed, which is available anywhere you want. If you go to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link, and you'll find all the details for the RSS feed in there. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Lavers. Cheers, Garrers.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, guys.
Okay, it's one of our rare post-credit sequences, a pre-recorded one rather than just a mistake, which is what we normally put up. Lavers, what do you got to tell us?
One more thing. Both PGS, Portsmouth Grammar School and Millfield, are both currently advertising for a coach or a couple of coaches in various different capacities. So if you are interested in that or any other cricket-related jobs at the moment, you can get to pitchvision.com/jobs and all the details will be there. And you will get the opportunity to either work with Garrers or you will potentially have the disappointing time of working with me.
Send in your applications. See you next week, everyone.